Hello and welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. This is Robert Pratton and you can find me online on Twitter as Rob Pratton. And with me this week I've got Jason Roberts, and I first became aware of Jason through his like amazingly interesting game called Goragoa. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. And I'm going to hand over to Jason. Jason, just introduce yourself please and tell us how you sort of got to do this game.
As you mentioned, my name is Jason Roberts. This is a game that it's my first game. I'm a software developer, but not in the game industry. But I've had game ideas kicking around in my head for, you know, decades, I guess, at this point. And it was sort of a long process of juggling different ideas in my head until I finally found one that I thought was simple enough to execute. And then I ended up, you know, for a while I tried working on it in my spare time, but it just wasn't progressing. So, you know, my the company I was working for was running out of funds in any case, so I thought I'd take a while to work on the game full time.
Oh, okay, right. I think before we go any further, we should try to like explain the game, and then we'll come back into like how long it's taking you to get there. How would you describe the game?
Well, it's a little bit tricky. I like it's always best if you play it.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a game. It's somewhere between an adventure game and a puzzle game. It's played on a 2x2 grid, and there are up to 4 tiles in play at any one moment. Every tile is a separate window into the game world, or into, you know, different worlds. And you progress by aligning tiles so that the images on the tiles connect to one another, or by stacking one tile on top of another so that the images combine, or by splitting a tile into 2 parts, and that is how you solve the puzzles in the game. If that doesn't produce a clear mental image, then just go get the demo and try it for yourself. I would.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, one of the things, when I first saw it, I just found it amazingly original. I mean, how on earth did you come up with that idea?
Well, it was a long process, which I've been, you know, trying to reconstruct, because other people have asked me that. But you know, because this sort of soup of ideas in my head for a long time. But I think it began as an idea for a comic, you know, a series of comic panels that would be interactive and that you could move them around. You know, I was looking at some examples of comics that play with the format. You know, that you've got rectangular comic panels laid out on a page or a plane.
Right.
And I like the idea that you could, you know, move something from one comic panel, you know, pick something up and put it down in another panel, and move an object back and forth maybe, or move the panels themselves. So right. That, you know, a panel from one point in the story would connect to a panel at a different point in the story, and then those two moments in time would interact somehow.
Right, okay.
And that idea also involves an element of time, where you've got a character possibly interacting with themselves in a previous panel, therefore in the past.
Yeah, but yeah.
I think I eventually decided that concept was getting too complex, you know, from a storytelling standpoint.
Right.
You've got stories that, you know, fold back on themselves and in a strange way. So I like that idea, but this whole long process has been one where I've been trying to simplify the concept to the point where I can make it happen.
Is that why you went with maybe like 2x2 instead of 3x3 or something?
Yes. Earlier designs had a larger grid, and Of course, the larger it is, the larger the grid is, the smaller the individual tiles are.
Yes. Yeah, for the same space anyway, because...
Right.
And, I mean, what attracted me to it was it looks lovely and you're not... It looks like there's a story there. And so when I'm playing it, I'm trying to piece together some kind of narrative, even though it's not explicit. It kind of feels like there is a narrative implied. Now, did you start with a story? Because you're saying started with a comic kind of idea. With the current game, is there a narrative there?
There is. I mean, I think it's, you know, even if you play to the end of the demo, I think it will be, you know, it may not be entirely clear what's going on. I did intend there to be a narrative. It's, in a way, it's a simple story, but, and, you know, there will be a sort of peripheral themes going on also. I guess that didn't make a lot of sense, but one thing about the story is in storytelling in the game is that I want it to be nonverbal.
Yes.
And you know, because well that's a whole other long story.
Because I think it's good at conjuring a mood. Like
yeah.
it is emotional actually.
Yeah, there is a yeah, and that is important to me, a sense of mood, of tone, of a world that may not be coherent in the normal sense. I mean, one of the things that the game does is it equalizes different layers of reality, so to speak. You know, like the contents of a picture on the wall can be brought up to the same level of reality as, you know, the supposed literal world or a character's thoughts. And
yeah.
And so, you know, you can't, it's not necessarily a literally coherent world in the normal sense, but you still have a character that's moving through that world who has a purpose. And, you know, and there is an ending towards which the game is eventually working.
Brilliant. And it's really good.
And some of these things are, you know, are changing, are in flux as I tend to, things tend to be fluid, you know, when I'm designing something like this.
Right.
And yes, and I had versions of the design that I've scrapped and, again, mostly in case because I thought that they were getting too complex.
In terms of the storytelling, or in terms of the mechanics, or
well, both. But you know, I given the complexity of the medium and its tendency to, you know, mix up different parts of the world or different realms of imagination. I felt like and I still feel like there has to be a strong and simple through line.
Right.
Elaborate and, you know, plotting in the normal sense, I think is going to lead me in the wrong direction.
And what would you say was the seed of the idea there? I mean, like in terms of the narrative, like what is it that you want to convey with the story, would you say?
Well, I think of, you know, the story has gone through a number of iterations, but I think it's, you've got the main character who is a boy, and the way, I mean, my conception of the story is that he is, in some sense, missing something, and he is, you know, possibly, you know, something spiritual.
Right.
And, I mean, maybe he's looking for some sort of a, not necessarily, you know, something divine, I guess. But
yeah.
So he encounters this creature, but its nature is ambiguous, possibly benevolent, possibly menacing.
Yeah.
But the character is still drawn to an encounter with this being, whatever it might be, because he's looking for something that's missing. He's looking for some sort of fulfillment. And I'm not saying that any of that is clear, you know, is in the piece of the game I've worked on so far. And I also, you know, will be developing a lot of these themes more as time goes on.
You see, I think that does come out. I mean, I wouldn't have known what the boy's quest was in that sense, but I did get that emotion is coming across, I think.
Yeah, well, that's great.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, because that's all conveyed, I think, in the, if you can call them scenes, you know, like where you, in when you sort of start moving the tiles and the things that unlock and the way they, and the, you know, the images that you've used, I think they do convey that. I mean, what inspiration did you draw from to create those images?
Well, it's hard to, I mean, the, well, one inspiration I cite is there's a cartoonist or a graphic novelist named Chris Ware, who he does these extremely elaborate comic panel layouts. So, you know, getting back to comics again. And even though the visual style is somewhat different, I love the sort of the compositions that he creates, that sort of many of which kind of break the traditional rules of the way comics are laid out. There's, you know, there are a number of illustrators that there's a someone called Christopher Manson. He wrote a number of sort of picture puzzle books. One of them was called Maze.
Okay.
And you've got a series of every page represents a room in the maze, and then you have numbered doorways leading to other pages, and the whole thing is you have to find your way through the maze, and then there's a riddle you have to discover.
That's brilliant.
And that is something I read when I was young, and that's been a major influence, even though the visual style might seem different. Although at least one person at Indiecade spontaneously came up with that comparison. Doré, the illustrator, 19th century illustrator, traveled around Europe. It was another visual inspiration, Edward Gorey. It's strange, you know, when I name these things, none of their visual styles necessarily look the same as mine, but I feel them as inspirations.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool actually to draw on that, because I know this is going to sound silly, but when I started playing it, it reminded me of Limbo, and like Limbo, like it looks completely different and very similar as a little boy, but it, like in that you're kind of I kind of want to know all this stuff about the little boy
right.
as he runs through, you know, and I get that same kind of emotional feeling from your game.
Sure, and Limbo doesn't necessarily make everything clear.
No, it doesn't. No, not at all. But it was one of the most affecting games that I played last year. I thought it was really good. And I get that same feeling with yours.
Well, thanks. That's a flattering comparison, because yeah, I also really like that game. Probably also one of my favorites of the year, and a very strong visual style.
Yes.
Short but sweet. But yeah, that was a great game.
And did you have you played Journey as well?
Yes, I have.
Because that was another one that really struck me as being something quite amazing. And I think your game is going to go in that same category, really, because it's not about killing people and running
right.
around. you are taken on a journey, or you're right. you're taking yourself on a journey. It's amazing.
Well, again, that's great company to be in. It's been a good year for independent games, I think. I was also a big fan of Fez, and I don't,
okay. yeah.
I don't know if how similar that feels, but it's a game that's also very much about atmosphere and sense and tone, and not about you can't kill anything in that game.
Yeah.
Not that I'm
against killing.
And you can kill. I think you can kill things in Limbo.
Yeah. Okay.
And certainly, you can die a gory death.
How much of the game have you created yourself? Have you worked with other illustrators and other people, or?
No, I've done everything myself thus far.
And okay.
I would consider working with a collaborator. But most of the time is spent on art.
Yeah.
And if I worked with another artist, either that artist would have to match my visual style, or there would be some reason within the game why different parts of the game have a different style.
Got it.
Which could work, but yeah, I mean, that's so far. It's a one-man operation. I will possibly work with a composer at some point because that's something I am not going to learn to do soon enough. And, you know, there's licensed music, but which is what I'm using now.
Right.
And, you know, so working with another coder might help, but for doing things like porting the game to other platforms. But basically, it's not clear how to divide up the work at this point to make the game twice as fast with two people, which is, or, you know, three times as fast with three people.
Because how are you like developing the sort of game mechanics? I mean, I guess the mechanics are there, but how do you? Like, what develops first? Do you know where the story you want to take the story, or do you actually let the movement of the tiles dictate what illustrations should go with that?
I mean, all of these things sort of push back on each other. I might think of a puzzle first. I might think of a moment first, a scene first, and then I try and I generally have a lot of loose pieces floating around in my head, and I try right. and I try and put them together, all together in a way that where everything works together and is harmonious. If there's a part of the design that is too puzzly and too dry, you know, that's a problem. There might, you know, some people who've played the game think of it as see it as more of an experiential thing rather than a puzzle game.
Yes.
But I do intend to make more elaborate puzzles.
Right. Because like as you've got to level up kind of thing, is it? Or as it gets deeper into the story? Or
Yes, exactly. The chunk of the game that's in the demo is sort of still the first part of the game where you're getting used to the mechanic. And the part of the game that's in the demo is also subject to change. I may
just tell it, warn everyone now.
I'm contemplating interpolating some new material into the portion of the game that's already there structurally.
Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, the idea is to maintain the themes and the feeling of the game. But it's subject to change. It is a work in progress. That at least is clearly on the warning label. But I'm probably not going to throw out anything that's there that people.
Not if it takes so long to draw everything, it'd be a shame to have to chuck it away. I mean, how have you actually sort of sketched this out? Do you have like a big wall full of each tile and the arrows going between it? Or
not? I have documents. I have some scattered notes on graph paper. So there's no big wall, but there are diagrams of individual sequences. But how they all fit together is mostly in my head. No one's going to take over if I get hit by a bus.
God forbid that should happen. So how long has it taken you to get, because you said, you know, like you sort of quit work and worked on it full time. So how long was that period to get it to where it is now?
Well, that period was a little bit over a year, but I had been working on it part time for, you know, considerably longer than that. And that process had a lot of dead ends where I, or learning experiences, I guess.
Yeah.
Where I would put a bunch of time early on into some approach to doing the game, usually the visuals, and that would turn out to be the wrong way to go. Or I produced a lot of art early on that I ended up redoing because I got better at it.
Oh, I see. Right.
Because
I've heard like game designers say that as well. Like they start off and not replacing it because they get better at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, everything has to sort of match to some extent. So
yes,
if you're working, you know, on the game from beginning to end, you'll get somewhere around, and you're starting from being a novice like I was, and you reach a point where you've gotten much better at producing the visuals, and now there's a quality mismatch, and you think, well, now I want to go back and redo the beginning, the earlier artwork. But you can see how that's potentially an endless process.
Oh yeah. If you're not careful, yeah.
Yeah, but I think there are certain plateaus that you reach in developing any skill.
I mean, it looks pretty professional to me now. I mean, I don't know how you would improve on what you've got there now. It was really nice.
No, I don't. I don't intend to redo much of the art. You know, I might remaster some of the animations, but I'm not looking to improve on what's there, just to have more stuff of the same quality.
And how much? So there's a demo available now that people can download. But when do you, like, where do you see it going? Like, how much time remains before you're gonna say sell it, for example?
Well, the plan is for about another year. A little bit, maybe a little bit less at this point. But yeah, I mean, it's.
I'm working on it full time. You're going to work on it full time for a year?
That's the plan. I mean, I would have said something different, you know, a year ago. But that's before I realized how time consuming making a game is.
Right.
The process is just takes a lot longer than I thought. Now I think I've got a handle on how long it takes. But, you know, that's because I want it to be of a particular size.
Got it.
And I have something particular in mind, so we'll see. But that is what I've been saying. That is the plan.
And how are you funding it, or how are you paying for food and rent and stuff?
Well, I saved up some capital, and that is potentially enough to get me to market, but I may also, I mean, it's possible I will seek outside funding or a publisher.
Oh, I see, right.
To offer some more security.
What sort of platforms do you see it going on? Where do you...
Well, it's implemented on, and it currently runs on the PC and the Mac, the engine does.
Yeah.
And so that makes it relatively easy to release on those platforms initially. But really, I would like it to be on mobile devices that have a touch screen. I think that's something that's really well suited for. So it becomes more tactile. Generally, and it's a large touchscreen, I would think.
Is it easy to scale up the graphics? Because right now, when I play, it's quite sort of small in relation to the size of my computer screen. But
well, what is your at what
resolution? What's the resolution? Yeah, I don't know. I've got quite a high resolution screen, so
I've scaled it up. I've done one upscaling. Any further upscaling is and so you downloaded the demo recently?
Yeah.
So it can scale up the graphics. I can make it so that it scales up the graphics, but there is a degradation in quality if the original drawings are not at a high enough resolution. So to scale it up further will require some more work on the animations, etc.
Right. But I could totally see it on a mobile device or on a tablet or something like that, because it feels like it's one of those things you want to lean back with and kind of explore that world. I could, or even on a commute. I say it definitely feels like, it would go well on one of those devices.
Yeah, that's the idea. I think it would feel more magical, I guess, if you could actually move things around with your fingers.
Do you have, you mentioned like comic books and the storytelling. Do you have any sort of aspirations of breaking this story out beyond the game? Because I could see, other kind of stories involving this sort of story world that weren't in a game format.
Well, that's an interesting idea. I hadn't thought about it. There are other stories that I also want to tell. So I don't know if I would extend this world beyond the game. Maybe. But I do like the idea of working in sort of different media. I always wanted to. One of the things when I was younger, I wanted to be a writer.
Right.
And I've tried my hand one time at making a comic, which is sort of formatted more like a graphic novel. But I only got about 10 pages into it before I found that it was taking up all my time and that the story I was trying to tell was too ambitious.
Right.
But there are other media that I'm interested in besides games. And I'm interested in the space between media also. If you see what I mean, like things that are not necessarily a game, but not necessarily static comic or storybook.
So what would that be? Because that sounds very interesting.
Well, I don't know, but I want something that is, even though I went out of my way to make this a completely nonverbal experience, this game, I like the idea of having text in a game as, if I'm picturing something where you've got like a block of text on one side and an image on the other side, like a storybook, and both of them are involved in the gameplay, so you can interact with both halves are involved. You can interact with the the scene, the image, and you can interact with the words to change the words. And so, yeah, and
brilliant.
Changing the words, change the picture, and vice versa. So something like that. That is something that I like, because it's that sort of space is not being explored by a lot of people.
No. No, that sounds amazing. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. So that is that's the kind of thing that's sort of in between. I mean, it's still ultimately, in some sense, a game. But I feel that the divisions, the sort of these category boundaries between the different media aren't that important. It's all one landscape, and that there are these spaces in between that aren't sufficiently explored.
That's excellent. I think a lot of our listeners feel the same, actually. You know, like they transmedia storytelling is kind of like a bit of a sort of a catch-all for many things, and a lot of people put stuff in there which I wouldn't consider to be transmedia storytelling. But what you're describing now sounds like something that might fall under that, you know, like fall under at least the interest of people that are exploring that area, looking at how to, you know, get people participating in that story in some way. And yet in the example there that you've described, they're participating, and yet you're still the author of it. You're still kind of guiding them through a particular journey, if you want to call it that. I mean, it sounds very interesting.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question about the relationship between the author and the player, and to what extent the author should exercise control. There's very much a trend in at least at the high end of video game design to give the player more freedom to create their own story.
Yeah,
which I like. I think it's a great trend. But as a player, I generally prefer a stronger authorial voice, I think. I mean, it's the player or reader is always a collaborator to some extent. But when I play these games that are big, sort of procedural worlds, these open worlds that you travel around in, I have the sense of that the creators of the world feel more distant. Like somebody came and, designed a building and then moved on. Or there may be a scene within the game that the designers never anticipated, which is amazing in one sense. And that's really cool that there's, you know, you as the player can create a new moment in the story that no one's ever seen before. But it also means that moment is, because the creators didn't anticipate it, it's no longer a moment of communication between the author and audience. When I encounter a moment in a game that I know has been designed, that you can feel the presence of the creators in that moment. You know, they're sort of walking beside you, as opposed to being the sort of distant creator deities that built assembled the clockwork of the world and then just set it all running. So yeah, I mean, I'm sort of pulled in two directions by that, the whole question of how strong authorial control should be
I think it's really interesting, and I think with your game as it is now, I definitely feel like I'm bringing something to the story, because I'm trying to interpret the images. And so although I know that you've, you know, scripted, for want of a better word. Like, you know where it's going, but I still feel like I'm trying to rationalize it, and I enjoy that about it, that that I feel like I'm taking part in it as I'm playing. I'm kind of exploring the story. I really like that.
It also has an unusual structure, I think, with respect to story, which is that you don't directly control the main character. Instead, you, in a sense, control the world around the character.
Yeah, exactly. That's cool.
And there are other games that work that way, but it's a space that is not hasn't been explored as much as a standard model, where you have a character that you inhabit, or multiple characters. And I think, you know, this is, if you have a character you can't control, but you can shape the world around them, then that's a different sort of relationship between you and the story and the character. I mean, in a way, it's more parental, I guess.
Exactly. I was thinking that. I feel like protective towards him. I don't want him to like come to any harm. But like, have him walk off a cliff or off the edge of the building or something.
Right. But I mean, you know, I'm not a parent, but I do know enough to say that you can't, as a parent, you cannot directly control your kids. You don't. So you can only indirectly try to help them out. And I liked trying, and it was always, it's always a risk to try something that not fewer people have tried, because it may turn out that there's a good reason why nobody does it that way.
I think you've broken the back of the problem. I think with the demo, you've illustrated that this could be, I mean, it's already pretty amazing, but if you're going to spend another year on it, God only knows where it's going to go to from where it is now.
And yes. So, and the other thing is that, is the other new idea I was trying to work with, is that changing the relationship between the world and puzzles. You know, if typically you have, at least in an adventure game, you've got a world, and within the world are puzzles. But in this game, part of the idea was to turn that relationship inside out. So you've got a world that's inside of a puzzle instead of the other way around.
That's very cool.
Changes the way you think about interaction. I mean, another idea that was probably banging around in my head is, if you've ever been playing imagine playing two games in two windows on your desktop, and then you wish you could put the two windows next to each other, and then characters could cross from one game into the other.
Right.
You know, to break the distinction between the different levels of interaction. You know, you've got the operating system and a Windows on the desktop, and then you've got these games that are, or other applications that are trapped within those windows and they're never aware of the higher level. They can't transcend the structure they're inside of.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to happen within the game, to break down these distinctions between levels, between frames, systems, and subsystems.
It's fascinating. I mean, just appreciating all that thought that's gone into it. That's quite mind blowing, actually. I'm just I'm sort of sitting here trying to wrap my head around, you know, your thought process when you've been approaching this. I think it's absolutely incredible. I mean, at IndieCade, like, what was the sort of reaction there? What were people saying when they came up? Do you think, were they on the same level as you in that regard?
Well, I think so. I mean, most people, I mean, at IndieCade, you've got a station in a big, it's a converted firehouse, actually. Right. But it's a big room with and they set everything up, so you don't have to set up your own booth. You've got a little kiosk with the laptop running your game. And people show up, and they play the game, and people had a lot of positive things to say. Like, and they would stay in, you know, they might stay there and hold up the station for 25 minutes playing the game, because they never kicked anybody off. But they didn't, there wasn't a lot of, too much time for in-depth reactions.
Yeah, okay.
People would either say they liked the game or just walk off. So,
because they couldn't kill anything. Oh, no one.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that they didn't like it, but yeah, I mean, so I either heard it was all either positive or nothing, but rarely did somebody say, "Oh, I like this. I didn't like that. This worked. That didn't." And that sort of feedback is valuable, but it's kind of a lot to ask from people, especially to say it to your face. You know, when you're,
yeah.
you know,
yeah,
when
yeah,
you're
yeah.
a stranger. So, like, you know, if everybody who had played the game at the festival had gone home and written long, involved emails, you know, telling me which parts were working, which parts weren't, that would have been great. But that doesn't happen either. You know, so far, yeah, I mean, if people write me feedback, it's just, you know, great game. I think, fortunately, people who don't like it. Well, so there's people that say that love it. That's fine. That's great. There's people, yeah. presumably people that don't like it. It's just not their kind of game, like you say.
Yeah.
But there's a group in the middle that says, I like it, but, you know, if you, this part was confusing, etc.
Oh, right.
And those are the people that, you know, it's most useful to hear from. Because I don't think that I'm a master puzzle designer just yet. All games benefit from playtesting, from feedback. And I basically developed the demo that you've seen on my own. I didn't want anyone to see it until I got all the art looking the way I wanted it to.
Right.
And as a result, it was all based on my own instincts about how to design puzzles and do storytelling. And, you know, when you do something entirely in your own head, there may be things that are perfectly clear to you and by which other people are don't get. So, I mean, and that's the phase I think I'm in now, where I will hear back from people. And I mean, I'm not going to change direction 90 degrees based on every piece of feedback, but I do want to run things by people. I mean, it has to work as a storytelling experience, and it has to work, and the puzzles have to work. And that means that I need other people's eyes on it. So I will assemble a group of playtesters and proceed the way you're supposed to proceed when making a game, which is to, you know, make rough prototypes and allow people to bang on them and try them.
And what's your, like, going forward now? So you got like another, you got like notionally a year before,
right,
you know, it's ready to go. What's your sort of strategy for sort of building a community around this? Like, are you encouraging people to go to the Facebook page and share ideas there? Or how are you planning to sort of build up this sort of head of steam in advance of maybe going to a publisher or going live yourself?
Well, I mean, that is an important, that's an important area, and one with which I've been largely unfamiliar. I am hoping to release, you know, yeah, I will, whether it will be built around the Facebook page or the website. I'm still thinking about how to release content, you know, at intermediate stages. Possibly releasing things that are not directly related to this game, but that share something of the same sensibility. Other sort of mini puzzles, that kind of thing.
Right.
But online community building is something that I've got to learn how to do, like all this other of the process. I mean, yeah. So, you know, what I really want to do is just keep working on the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I understand these community relations, buzz fostering kinds of activities, and just in the internet commerce world, I think goodwill is very important. Community and goodwill, so. And I like I say, I'm at the beginning of that process, I think.
Got it. And I think that your game will foster a lot of strong advocates, and I would say I'm one of them. I think it's got such a strong voice, and it's so unique, and from, like, you know, so kind of from you know, an original mind. And what we've been discussing over the last sort of 40 minutes is that process that going through. I think you're going to have quite a strong community that will go out and encourage other people to come and check it out, for sure. It'd be interesting to see you know, how many downloads you get, you know, since Indiecade and going through the year, and how those downloads kind of vary depending on different activities you do throughout the year. I mean, all that'd be really interesting, I think.
Yeah, I agree, and I'm not going to go through another period of isolation. don't intend to go dark again while I finish the game, because it's been really really positive, really encouraging to hear from people, and you know, some people really really like the game, and so have this connection to a big group of people that I didn't have before. And prior to, you know, hearing back from Indiecade, it was just, of course, I could show the game to friends and family and well-wishers, but they're not likely to, you know, be too negative or be too honest. So I really wasn't sure how the world would react. And you know, there were times when my confidence was low. Because, you know, sometimes you'll show it to people, and if you show something to the wrong person, they'll, you know, they may not say they hate it, but they'll say, well, it's yeah, you did some interesting things there. And
you want to strangle them. Right. Just come out and say it. You don't like it.
Yeah, or even something like, well, I've never seen a game quite like that. Well, that isn't necessarily a compliment. I mean, that's the thing about trying to do things differently from a lot of things I've seen out there, is that it's possible that that's because they're doing it right and I'm doing it wrong.
No, not at all. I don't think it's too. It's such an early industry, and there's room for like a ton of exploration and experimentation.
I think I'm. It's always good to park yourself, if you can do it in a way that's successful. Obviously, it's always good to park yourself in a space that's not as heavily occupied. And I think where a lot of AAA games are attracted to, they're sort of trying to crossbreed with movies to some extent.
Yeah.
Cinema. I'm more attracted, I guess, to print media as my model. And, you know, drawings, hand drawings, text, even though there's no text in the game, and there won't be any. Still, those that space is of more interest to me. And while there are most of the people I think that are interested in that space, especially when it comes to text, like text games,
yeah,
that is still very much a hobbyist community. It's not, you know, I follow the world of interactive fiction, text.
Yeah.
For many years, up until the like early 2000s, and there was a lot of really interesting things going on there. Then I got seduced. Then I was seduced away by console gaming, and it's been about 8 years since I've looked back into that world. And I assume it's only become more advanced. The people are only doing more interesting things with storytelling.
Yeah.
But I never hear about anything about it in any of the mainstream game media.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe there will be. Because I've also in the past tried to write. I've text games. It was called interactive fiction, but I'm not sure if the term interactive fiction now applies to a larger category of things.
Well, it still exists as a kind of genre, if you want to call it that. And there's quite a number of interactive fiction programs now, where some are quite, you know, like in Form or something, where you need a bit of coding, right through to kind of, you know, drag and drop, design your own sort of adventure game type things. And we covered one on this podcast called Quest, which doesn't require any you know, any coding as such. And that, and with that, although it's sort of largely sort of text based, you can include images and videos and all kinds of different things, and you can output onto a mobile phone, so that you can, instead of having to remember the commands, you can select them from a drop down. And I think just basic things like that makes it much more accessible. So I think the techniques of that type of storytelling and sort of puzzling are still being employed, but it's, people are looking at it in a different way to make it more accessible to you know, non-converts, if you want to call them that.
Yes, and it's always been, if your interface consists entirely of text, then that always is going to lower the bar to entry. It's, yeah. I mean, it's always difficult to make a game. And not everything that is interactive is a game. That's a whole other issue. somebody contacted me recently to ask if it was okay if she tweeted about the game from from at Not Game, which is a Twitter account. It's associated with this whole Not Game, notgames.org or something like that.
Right.
But there's this whole notion that, you know, not everything needs to be, like, what is a game? And generally speaking, that's a term for anything it's become a term for things that are interactive and on a computer.
Right, I see.
But a lot of times you want to dispense with some of the ideas that define a game, like the idea of victory. You know, games typically end, well, but one interpretation of the word, a game ends in victory, either one player's the victor against another, or you the single player wins a game. But sometimes you don't want, you know, there's a large class of stories where it doesn't make sense for the story to end in anything that you could call victory.
That's interesting. And so, like, yeah, okay. For me, I don't think it matters with, you know, like, it's just the experience of it.
Right.
So it doesn't, the definition of it doesn't really matter so much, except when it comes to the marketing and trying to pitch it to people.
Like, I agree. I think category should come after the fact. You should build whatever you, make whatever you want to make, and then people can categorize it. You know, it's sort of like a taxonomy for animals. You know, like what's a mammal and what isn't. You know, you never criticize an animal for not having all the qualities that, you know, like a platypus is not condemned for not perfectly epitomizing what it means to be a mammal.
Yeah, exactly. And, you shouldn't exist.
Right. So, you know, categories should be descriptive and not prescriptive. So, yeah, I sort of anticipated when working on the game that some people might say, oh, that's not a game. And that's fine. It's if you like it, I don't care what you call it.
Yeah, exactly.
If you dislike it, again, I don't, like, what does it matter what I call it?
Exactly. Okay, so Jason, I'm gonna wrap it up now. We've almost come up to an hour. And I think it's been a really thought provoking sort of conversation. I think people are going to get a lot out of it. Where can people go to download the game?
Gorogoa.com.
And I never asked like where the name comes from. But where does the name come from?
It's a word. It's an invented word, but it's from my own childhood. It was for an imaginary creature. So yeah, I
just made it up. That's perfect. I mean, that's fair enough.
Well,
that's,
I mean, really... the thing is that I thought long and hard. Well, sort of. I thought about it, about the title of the game, and I wanted something that wasn't a word. Because everything else about the game is, there's no language anywhere in the game.
Yeah.
So I didn't want the title to, you know, be a word in any particular language.
Perfect. That's really good. I'm just going to spell that for people. It's Gorogoa.
Right.
.com. So, and there'll be a link on the website anyway.
Okay.
So people can click it. Jason, thank you very much indeed. I really appreciate it. It's been great talking to you.